There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Join us. We're up on the rooftop garden. Perfect view of the big screen. Perfect view of the pool, of the loonies down on the beach. And, of course, some rather ominous crowds making their way towards us just behind the big wheel, the Dubai Ain, over on Blue Water Island. We'll keep an eye out on those for you as well. However, that said, it ain't cold. Beautiful weather conditions. Nice evening for watching live sport. So come on down here to Brasti and be part of proceedings. 4001 if you can't make it, at Dubai Eye Sport, at Dubai Eye 1038 FM if you would like to have your say. Let's get on with having a say and find out what's happening in the world of sport. Carlos, I can't remember if we've got live rugby at the moment or not, but you're going to tell us.
Yeah, nothing live at the moment, Tom. What I can tell you, starting off with NRL this morning, the Sydney Roosters have beaten the Cronulla Sharks 30 points to 16. The Manly Sea Eagles have beaten the Newcastle Knights 26 points to 18. And then the Sydney Rabbitohs beat the New Zealand Warriors 28 points to 24. I mentioned that there's sevens rugby down in Singapore, and the last game has come to an end there. It's South Africa beating Fiji 17 points to 7, as you said, Tom. And the big surprise, I guess, of the games this afternoon in Singapore was Canada beating Scotland 33 points to 10. In Super Rugby, the conclusion of the Brumbies against the Lions has come to an end there. The Brumbies winning that one 31 points to 20. The Sharks take on the Jaguars. That game will kick off at 5 o'clock UAE time. And then at 7:15 this evening, the Bulls take on the Reds. That game comes to you live from Pretoria. In England, in the Aviv Premiership this evening, we have got...
Gallagher,
Premiership. This evening, we have got four games for you. Your beloved Gloucester take on Bath. Harlequins take on Saints. Worcester Warriors take on Sale Sharks. And then the Bristol Bears take on Saracens.
Looking forward to those games. What's happening in the world of Formula One? Well, you've got a Chinese Grand Prix in the wee small hours of tomorrow. Ross Crist, who leads?
That's right. That's going to be in Shanghai, and it's Valtteri Bottas with the fastest lap. So he'll be in pole position with Team Mercedes, followed by his teammate Lewis Hamilton, then Sebastian Vettel from Team Ferrari, but with his teammate Leclerc and Max Verstappen in fifth pole with Team Red Bull. And looking at the standings after two races, it's Bottas in first with 44 points, followed by Hamilton with 43 points, and Verstappen with 27 points.
In the football, no goals up in Scotland. Scottish Cup semi-final, Hearts against Inverness. Halftime there, 0-0. Tottenham completely dominating against relegated Huddersfield. They're up by two goals. Goals from Wanyama and Lucas Moura already in that first half. And let's go over to Spain. Monty's keeping an eye on proceedings over in Spain for us. What's the latest over there, Monty?
Espanyol versus Deportivo Alaves. Halftime just started. Currently the score is 2-0. Espanyol have scored a second one, and that dents Deportivo Alaves' chances of a Europa League spot.
Good on you. Thanks so much indeed for that one. We'll keep more. We'll keep an eye on developments over there. Espanyol taking on Alaves in the early kickoff of Spanish La Liga. Barcelona in action just after 6 o'clock. They're away at Huesca for you. Fellas, obviously you've been talking golf already on the grill today. The sort of times we can look forward to when people start heading out on course?
Yeah, Tommy, Ross, Chris will update us on that. But what I can tell you, it's the 83rd Masters. They're playing for a purse of $11 million. And what I can tell you is two Aussies, one American, one South African, and one Italian. That is correct. Adam Scott, Louis Oosthuizen, Francisco Molinari, Jason Day, and Brooks Koepka are tied at the top of the leaderboard at 7 under par. And then, of course, at 6 under par, we've got the likes of Tiger Woods, Dustin Johnson, and Justin Harding, with the likes of John Ram, Ian Poulter, all in hot pursuit. Rossi, what time are they playing off?
Well, I just counted on my hands there, Carl, because we're about an 8-hour time difference from the East Coast. So at 5:05, we'll start to see our first 5:05 local time. We'll start to see our first pairings tee off. Pepperville and Grillo will be getting off there, and then at 9:15, you'll see Brandon Grace. You'll be very happy for him, Carl. He's at 3 over. He'll be going off at 5:15. He'll be paired with the amateur Kanya. So we'll see where these scores come in as they come in within the next hour here, Tom.
Ever since I mentioned how well Mumbai Indians were going in their game against the Rajasthan Royals, they've had an absolute mare and lost lots of very quick wickets. Two balls remaining, bit of a run chase towards the end of their innings, it has to be said. They've moved on to 179, but they've lost 5 wickets, so 3 quick wickets. The wickets of Kieran Pollard, Quentin de Kock, and Ishan Kishan has also gone as well. Pandya, the two Pandyas, in fact, H and K, both at the crease, and it is Hardik Pandya who's gone along nicely. He scored 22 runs from 9 balls so far. So we'll keep an eye on that one. Just a couple of balls remaining. We've been watching the IPL for the last couple of weeks now. It's not without incident, is it, Monty?
No, not at all. This IPL in particular, there have been a lot of errors from the umpires. No balls which haven't been spotted.
And Mankadings, we've had them all.
Mankadings, yes, with Ravichandran Ashwin. But then the MCC came out and said that, yes, it was legal, etc. So this latest
one that's got everyone talking is Mahendra Singh Dhoni, who is obviously looked up to as one of the great standard bearers of world cricket and the spirit of cricket the world over. Why has he angered people this week?
MS Dhoni is, as we know, is a proper leader. He loves to win. He hates it when there's an error on the field. He wants everything to be perfect. That's MS Dhoni. The other night he lost his cool. He's called Captain Cool, but we know that how much he plays for India and CSK. It means a lot to him. And on that night, especially, he knew that if CSK would have lost, they would still require another 2 or 3 proper games to win. But that particular game, if they had won, which they did, it puts them in very good position now to be on the top 3 or 4 to qualify for the playoffs. And MS Dhoni plays for his team and wears his team on his chest. So yeah.
So the incident was a bit of a run chase at the end. In the end, it turned out, with the benefit of hindsight, they were victorious. But there was contentious no ball called. Not wasn't called at the bowler's end, but it was called by Brooks Oxenford, who, to be fair, has come in for a bit of stick throughout the tournament anyway. He called it a no ball from the square leg umpire position, which prompted MS Dhoni to come onto the field to remonstrate with the umpires, which, for those that don't understand their cricket, just ain't cricket.
No, that's not. To be honest, it's against the spirit of the game that MS Dhoni walked on the cricket field. However, we always have a third umpire, so I'm amazed as to why both umpires never consulted a third umpire. If that would have happened, it would solve a lot of things. It was simple, but it was just a lot of drama that night.
Ben Stokes conceding 21 in that final over, 6 off the final ball to see that game sealed in rather controversial terms. But it does keep the headline writers happy and creates yet more intrigue. I mean, overall, Monts, have you enjoyed this IPL? We've seen some extraordinary performances. We've seen some pretty dire performances as well.
Yep. Starting with the first game, of course, when RCB were 70 all out. I think even I remember Mumbai Indians or which team was that out for 96? I think so. There have been some low scores. However, the quality of the IPL has been good. I have been chatting up with a lot of people about RCB.
What's happened to them?
RCB are
got team selection wrong, surely.
Yeah, I mean, let's compare RCB to, I know Real Madrid, they win trophies, but RCB are like the El Clasico, you know. I mean, they have Galacticos in their team, like, for example, AB de Villiers, Virat Kohli. I still don't understand as to why they cannot perform. I just think that they tinker around with their starting 11 too much. They keep changing their strategy. It just doesn't give the team enough balance.
My theory is, you're right, they've got the Galacticos in there, but they're too top heavy. They've got an extraordinary top order, which would instill fear into anybody. But once you get past like the sort of 5th or 6th wicket, you're into a very long tail. And there isn't the balance between the world-class batsmen that they have in that team and world-class bowlers or bowlers that can back it up.
Yeah, I think RCB, The problem with them all these seasons has been their bowling. Their bowling has been really weak. So even if they get a score of, say, 200 plus, they cannot defend a score of 200 because of weak bowlers. That's their biggest problem. I think they're very heavy on batsmen. And I think for a 2020 game, you have to have the right balance, batting, bowling and fielding. Yeah.
Do send us your thoughts on all things IPL. We'll talk more cricket, we'll talk more sport in just a few moments' time. This is The Grill, broadcasting from a rather blustery, a rather blowy, a rather windy, but thankfully still dry, as in the weather, Barasti.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti. Enjoy your weekend with a 99 dirham main and a hop lunch combo.
Look, fellas, I don't mean to be a party pooper or anything, but it's going to rain in a minute, all right? It's just a matter of time. I'm just saying it now. I'm just putting it out there. I'm looking out there. Look at the skies behind us there. You know, we'll post something up onto social so you can see what's going on. Which could be quite fun. Could be quite fun live radio. It's going to be fun down here at Brasti.
Holding electronics in the middle of the rain sounds great, Tom. Why don't you just throw the blow dryer in the bath and get it over with?
I'm just going through a tough time, all right? You know, times are tough, okay? Just get me through to the end of the year, please. Christo. Right, what's going on in the football? I can tell you there's been a goal over in Spain. Mons, what's happening?
Yep, Alavés have pulled the goal back. It's 2-1 to Deportivo Alavés in the 57th minute. And obviously they need another two more to go on to 48 points tonight.
We will keep an eye on that one for you. I want to look ahead to football we've got for you later on in proceedings, if I can. Just to let you know and confirm that we'll be talking to Russell Hargreaves, hopefully, rain abiding, just after 5 o'clock this afternoon. Russell is going to be calling Burnley against Cardiff for us. A relegation six-pointer, if ever there were one. And then stay tuned straight after that one. Manchester United against West Ham, fans of which are around this table as we speak. It's live here on Dubai I-103.8 from 8:30 p.m. this evening. Let's hear from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, the new Manchester United boss. He has apparently challenged his players to get 15 points from the remaining games.
We need as many points as possible, and I think if we do get 15, we will be top three, because then in those games, hopefully we would have beat Chelsea as well. But now it's about 3 points against West Ham, and of course we go into this one only focusing on a good performance that will give us 3 points. We want to be in that race to get in the... Yeah, we want top three, but of course top four is also an aim if we don't get them 15, but we should aim for 15 points.
I want to get the boys' thoughts on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer in just a few moments' time, because obviously he's been given the reins. 3-year contract, I think it was, that has been signed by Ole. But and I can understand it, given the fact of what he's been able to do. However, last couple of weeks, there have been a few chinks in the Solskjaer armour. And, dare I say it as well, even midweek, during the press conferences, which apparently... which he's been so good in, because he's been so honest, he's been so forthright, he's been so open to the press about what's been going on at Man United. Until this week, where is it just me, or is he starting to lose his marbles just a little bit? And Herrera, injured. How? Have a little listen to this.
You know, maybe the future might have been worrying him, and maybe that's part of the reason that he's injured. Who knows? He doesn't know, because he got a different injury in training. So hopefully he can be available for roundabout Chelsea City. But I'm not sure, because he got another muscle injury.
OK, Ole. So let's just go over that again. So Ander Herrera is injured because he's worried about his future at the club. CVR.
And I'm not really too sure when he's going to be ready. And Herrera, mate, I hope you're looking for another club. I think if your boss gave you a message like that, Tom...
Isn't that sort of perfect example of being put on the spot and sort of humming and ahhing and not really want to say? I mean, that doesn't make him a bad manager or anything like that. But I just want to get the thoughts of a Man United fan. I mean, it's a difficult one, because we're judging him on a couple of bad results after what was a long list of good results.
Yeah, but before I get to that, there's another person that's got a slight problem in the UK. When I was over in the UK now, reading in the newspapers, Virgil van Dijk has been renting Ollie's house in Manchester. And now, because Ollie's got a full-time job, he's moving back to Manchester, which means Virgil needs to find a new house. Anyway.
He's been given notice,
hasn't
he?
He's been given notice, but I'm sure with his budget, he'll be able to find himself something very comfortable to live in.
I'd be interested to know what state he leaves the house in, given the lack of love between Manchester United and Liverpool.
Yeah, Ollie, I hope you know some good painters around the Manchester area. Tom, just coming back to the only question that you've asked me, I personally think, and I might come in for a lot of criticism to this, I think they've given him the job too soon. I don't think he's a long-term plan for Man United quite yet. And the reason why I'm saying that is because I don't believe he's quite got that experience in the big leagues as what's needed to manage an empire like Manchester United. So I would have liked to see him maybe get in with under-21 side, or maybe go to a slightly smaller club, where he can kind of, you know, build these foundations, get a bit more time on the pitch, if you can put it as such, and then bring him into the role. Yes, he's had some outstanding results, but at the end of the day, he hasn't really... Yes, he beat PSG. Fine, I'll give him that one. But I'm fairly speaking from a Premier League perspective, to me, he hasn't really beaten any big teams. He had the win against Tottenham. That game could have gone either way, and he had the win, of course, in the FA Cup against Arsenal. To me, too soon. Do I rate him? Yes, I do. The job too early to him.
The golden gunner runner always had to come to an end, Monty, but surely we've got to give him the benefit of the doubt till the end of the season, haven't we?
Yeah, 6 weeks ago, he was on a golden run because obviously he didn't play really strong teams, but 6 weeks later he's got the job now, a 3-year contract, and I think the only reason why they gave him the contract is because he comes from the United culture, and that is what I think Sir Alex Ferguson and the think tank in United have thought about and given him a contract for 3 years. However, he has a few new signings for next season lined up. Jadon Sancho from Borussia Dortmund and Declan Rice. I think they're really good young players. They would give him give United a lot of support in midfield. However, we have to see next season how it pans out. I think he's got a 200 million budget lined up for next season. Yeah.
Let's just see. Let's just hold on, Declan Rice. All right, fellas. Let's just hold for a little while. You know, remember he has signed a new contract at West Ham. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Ross, Chris, discuss.
I think he's winning the games that the last manager, Mourinho, couldn't win. Yes, Carl says he hasn't beat anyone good, but guess what? Mourinho wouldn't have won all those games. Mourinho wasn't winning the games that you should have won. And you can always pick the Pittsburgher out of the crowd because he's the one who will stand out in the rain while everyone else goes underneath the umbrellas as we broadcast as it comes down here at Barasti. But Ole Gunnar Solskjaer definitely deserves where he's at right now. He deserves the contract. Give him the 3-year deal. He knows the United culture. He gets results. He keeps winning. The players seem to want to play for him. And the other guy, Pochettino, his stock went down as soon as Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's went up as we all move house right now it is really coming down here at Barasti.
Don't worry about us. We're damaged goods anyway. Just look after the you all right there, Carl? Yeah, just looking after yourself. Yeah, over there. The rest of us will just look at you.
I've got a very expensive laptop, right?
He's literally, look how close he's got to him. Right, let's get some more of the thoughts on this one. Benj, I need you back on the ones and twos to press some buttons as we buy ourselves a little bit of time here because it's
coming down.
It's raining heavily. So we'll do all we can to stay on air. If we have to jump off air, it is because of technical reasons, but that shouldn't dampen the spirits down here at Barasti. It never does. However, we are talking Manchester United against West Ham, and this is the game that will be your feature game at 8:30 this evening. Manchester United manager Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has been saying that his strikers are lacking confidence.
Sometimes, you know, you just don't have that little feel, that little confidence. So you have to do it in training and hope that it comes out again in the games, because we have been fantastic. But lately we haven't been ruthless or clinical enough in front of goal.
That's what he thinks about his strikers at the moment. Not ruthless enough, not clinical enough in front of goal. So what can we expect from his team selection a little later on? Rotations, is that to be expected?
I've still got the options, of course, to rest one or two, because there are games coming up and loads of games, and they'll all play a part. Like we had players on the bench on Wednesday night, like Jesse, Anthony, that didn't normally start games. So yeah, there will be a couple of changes.
So let's hear from Manuel Pellegrini now, the man who's been charged with looking after West Ham through a rather turbulent period, a bit of an up and a down season for Pellegrini. Your thoughts would be appreciated on him. Do text them through to us on 4001. There were sort of muted suggestions that West Ham might be looking for a top four, top five, top six finish, maybe, possibly even a European place. He has put that one to bed categorically this week, saying that was never a target.
The European position, I repeat, was not our target of the season. It was my target to try to demand to everyone to have an ambitious mentality and try to reach it. But that's so many things that happened in this season that maybe it was very difficult for us. But we still have chances, and if you have mathematical chances, you must try to fight for that.
What's about today? What do you mean come off air? No, we can't take one for the team. It's to buy I-103.8. We never go off air.
Mark Archer,
the people want information. What would Mark Archer do with the rest of his afternoon? You have to talk to his wife or something. No. What's he expecting today then? Expecting a big reaction against United. That is Manuel Pellegrini.
Talking with the players, trying to do our best to feel that in every game we have 60,000 people behind us that want to see our team winning. And I'm absolutely sure that we are going to have a strong reaction in the next game.
Now, Manuel Pellegrini, like every other manager, has had injury concerns throughout the season. He has suggested that some of his long-term injuries have plagued their progress.
Well, I always demand more for the player, for myself, for everyone. That's why I always try to finish as high as the table as we can. But if you ask me, it's a good season. I think that 10 games or 9 games before the finish, to finish the Premier, we were not fighting for relegation. We have an average of 6 or players' injuries in every game. So most of the players that are right here, as Wilshere, Yarmolenko, Carlos Sanchez, Fabian Balbuena, they couldn't play most part of the season. So I think in seeing that point of view, it's not a bad season. But I think that we must demand all of us more and try to reach a spot, and I know it's difficult, but we must try to play in every game as involving absolutely in that target.
And finally, lest we forget, you know, Manchester United have been beaten by West Ham already this season. So, go on, allow me just this one. I know we are playing like absolute what's it at the moment, and they are possibly form-wise the worst team in the league at present. But allow a hammer, a happy or not so happy hammer, the opportunity to dream. What about the possibility, albeit a very rare possibility, but what about just that glimmer of a possibility of a double against United?
Well, more than link one game with the other one, are 3 points that we need in this moment. We have lost some last games, but we continue 5 points from the European spot. United's a difficult game playing away, and I think that if we beat them, we'll be a good trust for our players. It's raining men, hallelujah, raining men, amen. It's raining men,
hallelujah, it's raining men, amen. Unbelievable goal! This is The Grill. Live from Barasti. Enjoy your weekend with a 99 dirham main and a hop lunch combo.
I don't know if that was coincidence, it's raining men, or if that was somebody being very clever back in the studio. But it is, yeah, it's raining. And we've just been having a little look at the Met reports, actually. And we understand that this could be here for a while. We think this is setting in. However, we are taking one for the Grill team at the moment. We have refused to move. So we've hunkered down. The team have done their bit to waterproof proceedings. We'll bring you up to date with all the goals as and when they happen. But Ross Crist has taken up, I don't even know where Ross is, he's just taken up a position somewhere at Barasti at the moment to bring us all the latest from the world of US sport. Ross, over to you.
That's right, coming to you live from El Nino. It is the MLB scores. We're going to look at what's happening in the baseball back at home. And we're going to head to the nation's capital because it took 10 innings of work for those Pittsburgh Pirates to defeat the Washington Nationals 6-3. And they won off the bat of Colin Moran.
And that ball driven deep to right. Adam Eaton can only watch it. And the Pirates lead 6-3. The home run ball continues to haunt Justin Miller.
Colin Moran said, there's no way I'm getting another fastball in the same spot. Maybe he wanted that away, and you see the reach by Yan Gomes. He pulled it to the other side, and Moran was ready for the heater.
And And there you have it. The Pittsburgh Pirates improved to 7-5 on the season. Brundy gets the win. He goes to 1-1 with a 4.76 ERA. The Nationals fall to 6-6. Elsewhere at Wrigleyville, the Cubs hosted the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. And Cole Hamels picked up his second win of the season, but he had some big help from the Cubs' bats.
In here in the first.
And Rizzo launches. It'll go. Two-run bomb. Cubs lead early.
Belly button high. Center cut. Pow.
Contreras deep to left. Way back and hello, Waveland. 3-0. Wilson Contreras with a drive. He's hit two today. And both have found the street. 5-1.
Whoop, there it is. The Chicago Cubs go to 5-8 on the season. They're 3-1 in the north side of Chicago. The Angels go to 7-7 on the season. Skaggs picks up the loss. He goes to 1-2 now on the season with a 4.2 ERA. The Yankees hosted the White Sox. This game was called in 7 innings. Believe it or not, they called this game because there was too much rain. What a concept. But the Sox won this one 9-6 in the Bronx. J.A. Happ got the loss on this one. His ERA is 8.76. Not looking good for the Bronx Bombers right now as they sit at 5-8. The Rays went to up north to Toronto. They placed the Blue Jays. They won 11-7. Tampa Bay has been a pleasant surprise out there. They go to 11-3 on the season. Yarbrough picks up the win. He goes to 2-1. The Red Sox beat the Orioles 6-4. They won with some great A defense from Jackie Bradley.
High fly center field. That's hit deep. Bradley backing up. Jackie all the way to the wall, leaping. Oh! Oh, goodness gracious! What a play! What a play by Jackie Bradley!
Back at first, I wasn't sure whether that hit the wall, but no, it was directly into his glove. Look, it never takes eyes off the baseball. Tremendous concentration, feeling for the wall.
There you have it, Jackie Bradley. There's a reason that man wins gold gloves in center field. He is simply phenomenal up there in Boston for the Red Sox. Elsewhere across the MLB, we have the Philadelphia Phillies going against the Marlins. This was in South Beach. The Phillies won this one 9-1. They go to 8-4 on the season. Arrieta picks up the win. He's been playing good for them. He's at 2-1 on the season. The Braves lost to the Mets. The Mets came down to Atlanta for this one. The Mets won 6-2. Wheeler picks up the win. He goes to 1-1 on the season. The Athletics headed to Texas for a big game. The Athletics won 8-6 against the Texas Rangers. The Rangers fall to 6-7 on the season. The Oakland Athletics go to 10-8. Billy Beane's squad is doing quite well. Trevino goes to 1-0 on the season with a 1.64 ERA. Elsewhere, the Cleveland Indians head to the Kansas City. The Royals thump them 8-1. Royals go to 3-10 on the season, only their third win in 13 games. The Indians fall to 8-5. Keller picks up the win. He's been the one bright spot for the Royals this season. The Los Angeles Dodgers hosted the Milwaukee Brewers. The Brewers came into California and won this one 8-5. Albers picks up the win. He goes to 1-0 on the season with a 4.50 ERA. The Houston Astros got it done in Seattle, 10-6. Altuve, Gurriel, both hit grand slams to help the Astros get to 10 runs.
Baseball, and they chose baseball. And he rides this one towards the pen. It's deep, and it's gone. So George Springer with his fourth home run, RBIs 11-12, make this a 3-2 ball game. Altuve, 0-3, lined out to D last time up. Pitch. Oh, boy. And that changes things dramatically here at T-Mobile Park. A grand slam by Jose Altuve jumped on the first pitch. 6-3 game. His sixth home run gives him 12 RBIs. Jose Altuve with a grand slam.
Maybe it was a cutter trying to go to the outside corner, but it's in the middle of the plate, and he barrels it up.
1-0 here to Gurriel. Bases loaded. High fly ball, long run, Santana running out of room, into the pen, another grand slam. 10-5, Houston. 1-0 pitch, grand slam, and blows it open.
I went to bed last night at some unreasonable hour. I'm not going to tell you guys when that was, but before I went to bed, before I even went out, the Colorado Rockies headed to San Francisco to play the San Francisco Giants out there at Candlestick, and the Giants took 18 innings. That's two full games of baseball to defeat the Colorado Rockies. This game was still going on around lunchtime today. So if you went to that game, you saw over 7 hours of baseball. Congratulations to Burgeon picking up the win on that one, going to 2-0 on the season. That was the last game because the Detroit Lions headed up to Minnesota, and guess what happened in that game? It rained, and they decided to not play it. Another novel concept. So that's the rest of the baseball scores. We have Lord Stanley Cup's playoffs in full swing. My Pittsburgh Penguins going against the New York Islanders. Tom, you want to come in here, buddy? Or are we taking a break?
Just because I've got a bit of breaking news for you.
What's that?
Obviously, we've got some rather adverse weather conditions at the moment. We can't even see the Atlantis from our rooftop bar vantage point here because the clouds are closing in a lot. We're still on air. We're getting some very worried looks from Benji, more worried than usual, in fact. So we're going to keep an eye on that one. But I can tell you, I've just got the breaking news. There are still some people in the pool down here at Brassia, right?
Are there? Okay.
Okay.
Well, get out the budgie smugglers, Tom.
So whilst they are there,
take the afternoon
I
off.
Think it's only fair we stay on air, isn't it,
that's
really?
Right.
Carlos has taken up his position well and truly in the dry, so he's all right. Don't worry about that. We'll try and stay on air for as long as we can. We are taking advice from the technical team. We're taking advice from the Brasti team as well. We understand this weather could be here to stay for quite some time. So as it is, we remain on air. So keep it locked here on Dubai Iowa 3.8. This is The Grill from a very wet Brasti, where the game, miraculously, is still on.
This is The Grill, live from Barasti. Enjoy your weekend with a 99 dirham main and a hot lunch combo.
We soldier on. It's not ideal weather conditions down here, but let not dampen the atmosphere as we continue The Grill live here on Dubai I-103.8. We're going to get back to all things US sport. In fact, I just want to bring in, obviously Ross is going to be leading this one. I just want to get the thoughts from our resident rugby expert as well on a rugby turns NFL story that emanated from the United States earlier on this week. Christian Wade, we'll give you a bit of background on him in just a few moments' time. A man that could well make history received this call earlier on in the week.
Brandon Bean with the Buffalo Bills. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. I wanted to let you know that as of now, you're officially a Buffalo Bill. How's that sound?
It's crazy, man. It sounds crazy.
Christian Wade receiving that call. As of now, you're officially a Buffalo Bill. Before we get on to the reaction from the United States, let's get a rugby point of view. For those people that don't know who Christian Wade is, or was, I should say, CVR, tell us more.
Yeah, what I can tell you is Christian Wade is a former Wasps winger, and of course, he did play for England a little bit earlier on, Tom. What I can tell you is 28 year old, and as I said, there's a program in America now where they can basically decide if they're looking to enter the NFL and they haven't gone through the whole college system, they can do it, and that's exactly what Christian Wade did. What I can tell you about Christian Wade, he played 165 times for Wasps. He played England under 20, and he also played 7 times for the England Sevens team. He plays on the wing, a very, very quick player. Felt he didn't quite get the chances in England at the moment, especially under Eddie Jones. He didn't make the first initial training squad for England. It seems like Eddie Jones likes Jack Null as well as Johnny May at this moment in time. So as I said, he tried out for the Buffalo Bills as a running back, and of course he got the phone call. So well done to him.
Gets the phone call, part of this pathway program that's been put in place there. Ross, Chris, give us some insight into this one. A, what this means for Christian Wade and what the next step is. And B, in terms of the sort of turnaround, we're talking, 4 months here that he's had that turnaround from making the decision and getting the call.
Yeah, it's going to be a big, big learning curve for him, but he is a premier athlete, and we've seen a lot of these rugby guys transition over into the NFL game. They certainly have the skill set needed to succeed in the NFL, so he's going to be coming in playing the running back position. Now, traditionally in the NFL, this is a short-lived position. You only play a couple years because you really get banged up playing this type of position, so they look for big, fast, athletic people to take over the running back position. If you look at the Buffalo Bills right now, LeSean McCoy, he's electric at running back. Then they have future Hall of Famer Frank Gore as his backup. So basically, you have two Hall of Famers in front of you, two of the best to ever play the game in your position, who are going to be coming in and teaching you the ins and outs of the trade. So just because you got this phone call, gentlemen, doesn't necessarily mean he will be on the Buffalo Bills opening day roster. He still needs to work his butt off over the summer, make it through practice, through the training camp. Then if he makes that opening day 53-man roster, he is a Buffalo Bill. He will be wearing the helmet and have his name on the back of the jersey. If he doesn't quite make it there, he could then make it onto the practice squad, which is about a dozen players, and it's exactly what it sounds like. They just practice with the team for a year. They get to come with the team. They get paid a salary, not quite as much as the other guys as much, but then you get to learn the game even more. And this is where I probably see him playing this year for the Buffalo Bills.
That said, as part of the program that's been put in place, I suppose he's a perfect example of that new way into NFL.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly why they have this International Gateway program. The Pittsburgh Steelers did it with a former rugby player as well. We have a tight end. He's on my practice squad, and his name's escaping my head right now. But there's about a dozen players right now in the NFL that have came through this pathway program. We see a lot of AFL, Aussie Rules players that come over and take over the kicking and punting duties. So this is not anything new. It's good to see the NFL, though, expanding its horizons. And once again, they pull out a guy from England. They're looking every year. We have more and more games in England. We have the new Tottenham Stadium happening in England. So definitely, NFL is one of the big four in America that's doing everything right on the international scale.
Russ, do you believe that a player like, for example, Wade can really come in and make an impact on the NFL, though he hasn't really grown up with it?
No, not initially. It's going to take him some time. You just can't come in and play NFL football. It's too challenging and grueling of a sport. But if he could learn it over the course of the year, yeah, why not?
What do you think the most challenging part for him will be?
I think learning how to tackle with the equipment on. Because it's certainly different. Rugby players, they invented form tackling, but it's a little bit different when you're running around with body armor on. It plays the game a little bit differently. So that's one of the big transitions. Then you're going to have to memorize one of the most complex playbooks in all of sport when it comes to the NFL playbook. I mean, this thing is incredibly cryptic. There's a million different things you need to memorize. So you got to really pay attention in the film rooms, in the study rooms with your fellow running backs and your offensive side of the football. So it's not going to be easy. But he seems like he's up for the challenge, isn't he? I mean, he comes from a professional sports background, so he knows what its sporting culture is like. So he's going to come in, and I think it's also kind of a good thing that he didn't grow up in football. So he might not be so starstruck when he's out there. He might not say, oh, that's, you know, he might know who Tom Brady is, but he might not even know who he is. And he might just say, you know, this is another guy. I can go toe-to-toe with this guy. So, you know, who knows how this might work out for him, but I think it's a good thing for the NFL.
Great little story, that one. One we'll have more of in just a little while, but you've got other sport stateside at the moment, Roscoe.
Yeah, that's right. It's the Stanley Cup playoffs, and we're in full swing right now because the New York Islanders are on top of the Pittsburgh Penguins 2-1 in this series. The Penguins are down in an 0-2 hole heading back to Pittsburgh thanks to goals by Bailey and Eberle.
Back in come the Islanders. Barzell, right circle for Eberle, drifts towards the net on the backhand, shoots and scores. Jordan Eberle, forehand, backhand, back of the net. And it's 2-1 New York with 12:06 to play in regulation. You know, we saw this in the overtime goal, with the Penguins defensemen leaving their feet against skilled players. Back for Tate, shoots it, deflection, side of the net. Bailey tries to put it home, he dies. Josh Bailey with a power play goal, and the Islanders' lead is now 2. It's 3-1. Pretty simple power play there.
There you have it. The Penguins in a 2-0 hole against the New York Islanders heading back to Pennsylvania. Elsewhere, the Blue Jackets beat up the Tampa Bay Lightning 5-1. The Tampa Bay Lightning are the President's Cup trophy winners, which traditionally is a curse. Over the last 10 years, who has ever won the President's Cup trophy, which is the most points throughout the regular season, only one team has hoisted Stanley Cup trophy at the end of the season. So the Lightning are now in a 2-0 hole against the Columbus Blue Jackets. Las Vegas Golden Knights won 5-3 against the San Jose Sharks in the Shark Tank. The Golden Knights tie the series now, and they're moving on to game three. And the Blues beat the Jets up in Winnipeg. Sundquist scored twice in this one for the 4-3 win.
Bollmeister, right side for Riley. Right around, he scores! Ryan O'Reilly, a wrister from outside the top of the circle. Connor Helleba couldn't pick it up quick enough, and it gets between his arm and his body, and Ryan O'Reilly's first of the series has the Blues back in front 4-3.
Monty's alongside us at the moment. He's been keeping an eye on action over in Spain. What's the latest from there, full-time?
Full-time score, Espanyol 2, Deportivo Alaves 1. The game was 90 plus 7 added minutes. Unfortunately, Deportivo Alaves will have to fight another day because they were looking at a Europa League spot and now they're outside the top 6. Having said that, there's another game happening at the in the Serie A, which is a very important game today for Juventus. A draw there, and they would lift the Serie A without Ronaldo.
Just kicked off, isn't it? Spell against Juventus. Ronaldo not travelling with the team, is that right?
Yes, Ronaldo's not in the team, and I can just give you some team news, which is obviously keeping an eye on the Champions League with Ajax. It's Paulo Dybala who starts along the new kid on the block, Moise Kean, who's been scoring quite a lot of goals over the last few weeks. And the centre-back Leonardo Bonucci and Cellini don't start as well. So it's a completely new-look backline for Juventus.
And just the football that we're keeping an eye on, there's also rugby aplenty to keep up to date with.
Yeah, Tom, what I can tell you is we're at one kick-off in the top 14. It's Bordeaux taking on Castres. And what I can tell you is 21 minutes played there. Bordeaux leading that one 3-0. The Sharks have just kicked off against the Jaguars. That game coming to you live from Durban, from the Shark Tank in South Africa. So I'll keep you updated as the scores come in.
Yeah, Masters third round just about to get underway. It's the pairings right down at the wrong end of the leaderboard, but they'll get onto the course any moment now, and then we can expect the big guns a little later on. Ross Christ.
That's right. We have five people tied at 7-under. Molinari, Day, Kopta, Scott,
Louis Oosthuizen.
And DJ's at 6-under, Harding's at 6-under, Schreifel's at 6-under, Tiger Woods at 6-under, Poulter 5-under, John Rahm at 5-under. So many big names are still in the mix here come on the third day of the Masters. In fact, in the 83 times that they played this tournament, this is the closest it's ever been, with the most amount of scores all right next to each other coming into the third round. Tom just mentioned that some people have went out on the course. That's right. Pepperville, Brendan Grace, and Grillo are out there right now. Everyone else is going to be teeing off after them.
So four games kicking off at 6 o'clock local time here in the UAE. You can listen to action live here on Dubai Eye 103.8, courtesy of our friends and colleagues at TalkSport. Those games they're kicking off: Brighton against Bournemouth, Fulham against Everton, Southampton against Wolves. But our feature game, which will be called for you by Russell Hargreaves, who joins us live on the line now, is Burnley against Cardiff. Burnley in 15th place on 36 points. Cardiff in that remaining relegation spot, 18th place on 28 points. If ever there were a relegation six-pointer, Russell, surely this is it.
Yeah, absolutely. A very, very good afternoon from up in Lancashire for what should be a huge game. And you're spot on, particularly for Cardiff City. 5 defeats in 6. What a bad time to really lose your mojo. There's a variety of different reasons that I'm sure we can go into in a few minutes' time. But for Cardiff, if they lose this, you'd think their final 5 games, they'd probably have to pick up, at least 9 points and find some form big time. This is massive for them. For Burnley, they've done the majority of the hard work. They've won their last 2. I think one further victory, possibly this afternoon, would be enough. They're running tough. They've played more than most other teams around them. This Burnley's chance, I think, to really firm up their status for next season. For Cardiff, if they lose, it will be a bitter setback, not terminal, but not too far away from it. So, yeah, plenty at stake, no question.
I mean, Russell, I'm not one to get my head around statistics at the best of time. We've got all sorts of numbers and percentages being thrown at us. But as far as I can pick out, though, and just looking at the numbers as they stand up, Cardiff, I mean, can they really avoid relegation? Surely they are favourites to go down.
They are the favourites to go down, you're right, but were they to win this game, you'd see them close back within a couple of points of a couple of teams just above them, Brighton, Southampton, and obviously they play Brighton this coming Tuesday night away as well, so you never know. But you're right, it's been such a difficult season. We saw Cardiff really punch, I think, above their weight for much of the campaign, but then the whole Emiliano Sala, I think, affair has slowly just taken so much physical and emotional energy out of the team, on top of them just losing their mojo on the pitch at the wrong time as well, and all of that has just kind of intertwined and dovetailed to a point where they're just struggling for momentum, struggling for any kind of real belief at the moment. And their biggest two issues have been just not accruing enough points away from home and not scoring enough goals away from home as well. And both of those issues, I think, could well be very costly when they go to Turf Moor.
And that certainly seems to be in the case etched on Neil Warnock's face in recent weeks. I've worried for him, a couple of his outbursts amongst others. What's your sort of end-of-term report? I mean, I appreciate there's still a couple of games to go, but if you were to write an end-of-term report for Neil Warnock, what would it be?
I think it would be a solid effort. When you consider the fact that they did not, did they, spend a lot of money and really speculate to accumulate when they came up to the Premier League. This is largely a championship squad. And I think Neil Warnock did brilliantly early in the season to get the points he did and make Cardiff as competitive as they did. He's such a character. We know he's always going to be spiky with officials, with the media. He's going to mix it up. It's the way that Neil Warnock has always been as a manager, no question. But I think January, they decided to spend big on Emiliano Sala. And what a tragedy to have a player, of course, as we well know, that then died in a plane crash while travelling back ahead of his first game, having said goodbye to his teammates in Nantes. There's been the legal situation. There's been so many ramifications that we don't need to necessarily go into now regarding that since. And I think the spectre of all of that still rests on the club at this stage. And I think that was just that one bridge too far for Warnock as much as anybody. And he talked about maybe retiring there and then, possibly at the end of the season, said it's been the toughest time in football he's ever had to deal with, having that happen. And I think that huge development has been what's just pushed Cardiff from a plucky team in with a decent chance of staying up and punching above their weight to one, as we've alluded to, that probably will be the third team that goes down. But that's beyond Warnock's control. We can't blame him for that. And as a result, I would say still a solid effort given the balance since August.
Looking at Burnley this season and comparing them to last season, Sean Dyche just not getting things quite right this season. What do you feel has gone wrong at Burnley?
I think it was a really straightforward one, actually. It was doing so well last season that they got into Europe, and then having all of those Europa League qualifiers in July and battling through there and ultimately not even making the group stages, they just lost their identity as a club. And the manager, Sean Dyche, was the first to say that they almost kind of expanded too far for what they were capable of. They did increase their squad depth a bit, but not enough to cope with that kind of situation. And all of a sudden, their league form went south, their European form did not go well, and that ended, as I say, very early. And it took till about December to realign, work out how they kind of need to approach the season, approach games, and just get their old mojo back. And since December, their form has been outstanding. 14 Premier League games played and only 4 defeats. I think they lost 13 of their first 19. So since then, it's been not too far off top 6 form. And the critical thing is Chris Wood and Ashley Barnes fit and firing up front together. Best part of 20 goals between them. Big man, small man, target man, nitty man. That works so well. They've got good consistency of selection. There's probably about a 14 or 15 squad nucleus that just amends a tiny bit. They're unchanged today, for example, from the team that beat Bournemouth last time out. All of a sudden, consistency, momentum, it's back, and Burnley should be safe. And I think next season, not in Europe, I'm sure they'll be slightly more once bitten, twice shy, but what happened at the start of this, they'll kind of accumulate accordingly over the summer. And my guess is next season, they'll then be right up to a very comfortable and very competent mid-table, which again is a great effort for a small club when you compare them to the balance and the wages and the pay power of some of those above them.
That phrase should be always being used around about this time of the year, especially in the Premier League and other leagues. And you're so right, Russell. I mean, just looking at it, should they go on and get that third successive Premier League win, which will all but secure their fourth successive season in the Premier League, it's written almost in the sand at the moment. Having said that, and just looking at some of the thoughts going on down at Turf Moor at the moment, where we understand that flags, celebration flags, have been placed on each of the home seats for the homecoming celebration of Premier League survival. Is that a little premature?
Maybe a little bit premature, and I'll tell you why. They've still got some difficult games to come. They've still got to play Chelsea away, Manchester City at home, Arsenal at home on the final day. Their other match is Everton away. And as I said, they have played a couple of games more than some of those around them. Crucially, though, those last two wins have given them points on the board. I think that more than anything is why they'll just about have enough. But I do understand your point about being maybe just a little premature.
Go on then, let's have a score prediction from you before we let you prepare for the game a little later on, which is going to be live here in Dubai. Which way is this going?
I think Burnley will do it. I think that fab duo of Wood and Barnes will get a goal each. Cardiff continuing to struggle to score away from home. I am going to say Burnley 2, Cardiff 0, the Claret safe, the Bluebirds not out of it, but they're with a desperate battle and they're going to have to turn it around so, so fast, but I fear it won't be enough.
We've just seen Tottenham score their third down at what seems to be a very sunny and pleasant London. Is it such up in Lancashire at the moment as well?
Not quite to that degree, but it's okay, I'm pleased to say. It's never that sunny up here, to be honest with you. It's in this kind of part of the northwest, you've always got a little bit of a weather to deal with. But no, it's perfectly fine and it's not going to have any impact on the match itself. So we should be good to go, playing surface looking decent. And we are set fair, even if we don't quite have the sun and the blue skies and the warmth of the capital.
Well, see, I think it's very rare that we get to say this, but I think you've got better weather conditions than we have. It's absolutely pouring down here in Dubai at the moment. I don't think they'd be able to get a game, any sort of game, underway because of the waterlogged roads, amongst others. So, yeah, enjoy it whilst you can, Russell. And thanks so much indeed for joining us.
Always a pleasure. Look forward to speaking to you guys in a few minutes when we kick off.
Russell Hargreaves there, who will be calling it for you live here in Dubai, courtesy of all the team at TalkSport. Make sure you tune in from 6 o'clock. That's our feature game, so make sure you listen to that. And goals from all the other 6 o'clock kickoffs in the Premier League as and when they go in. Tottenham lead Huddersfield by 3-0. Who scored the third?
Lucas Moura. That was a fantastic striker's finish. He got the ball on his left and then placed it with his right foot. Assist by Christian Eriksen from the right. A very good goal for Tottenham. 3-0, game over, 3 points.
Right, we will keep an eye on that one. The rain's just got a little harder. Ross and I are sort of looking at each other worriedly because we've just heard buzzes in our earphones. We're not quite sure where that's coming from. We'll run a few checks. We might be back in a few minutes' time, or we're not.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.